Welcome to the Deep Dive. So today we're diving into something really fascinating, a very contested moment in history.
Absolutely. We're looking at the Council of Chalcedon.
Yeah, specifically that very first session, October 8th, 451 AD. And, you know, this isn't just dry history. Not at all.
No, it's a really gripping story. You've got power plays, accusations.
And it's the origin point for a major theological split, a schism that still impacts Christian traditions today.
It really does. Its effects are still felt.
Right. So our mission, kind of, is to forensically analyze the actual minutes from session one. Mm. We want to figure out why the Oriental Orthodox churches ultimately said, no, we can't accept this council.
What were the red flags for them?
Exactly. You'll hear about things that look like corruption, real injustice, and how politics got deeply, deeply intertwined with theology.
And what's so fascinating is how the details of just this one session, this initial meeting, really set the stage. It laid the groundwork for centuries of division. We're looking for those patterns, those procedural issues, the perceived injustices that made it unacceptable to a whole branch of early Christianity.
You mean the churches like the Coptic, Ethiopian, Syriac Orthodox? Yeah. Those ones.
Precisely. Those are the ones who separated after Chalcedon, mainly over how they understood Christ's nature.
Okay, let's unpack this then. So right from the start, a big forensic flag, as we might call it, was the heavy imperial hand.
Hmm.
This wasn't purely a church meeting, was it? Hmm. It felt overtly controlled by secular power.
That's right. You had high-ranking lay officials, people like a magister militum, basically a top general actually presiding, not just bishops.
A general running a church council.
Effectively, yes, alongside others. And if you connect that to the bigger picture, well, imperial orders, even from Emperor Theodosius II, were read out loud. They basically imposed a preset agenda. The stated goal was to, and I quote, completely excise the root of evil.
Wow. Excise the root of evil. That doesn't sound like an open discussion.
Not really. It strongly signals a specific predetermined outcome, doesn't it?
It certainly does. So it begs the question, how much was genuine theological debate versus just imperial decree?
That's the core question.
But playing devil's advocate for a second, could you argue that for a council this massive, covering such a huge area back then, you kind of needed some imperial muscle just to make it happen logistically?
That's a fair point. Logistics were definitely a challenge. Imperial backing for, say, travel and security was probably necessary. But the level of control seems to go way beyond just helping out.
Okay.
And that becomes crystal clear when you look at how they treated Dioscorus of Alexandria.
Ah, yes. The Patriarch of Alexandria. A very big deal.
A huge figure and a leader for the Miaphysite understanding of Christ. But right away, he's denied a seat with the other presiding bishops.
He put him where?
Placed him right in the middle of the assembly, basically as an accused person.
Just like that. On whose orders?
At the direct insistence of the Roman legates. So right there, you see procedural oddities and arguably a denial of fair process from the get-go.
And this wasn't just like a minor procedural hiccup, was it? This treatment had roots.
Exactly. Bishops at Chalcedon actually testified about the previous council, Ephesus II, often called the Robber Council because it was so notorious.
Right, the Robber Council.
They claimed Dioscorus, who presided there, had deliberately suppressed Pope Leo's key letter, the Tome of Leo.
That's the one explaining the Roman view, two natures in one person.
That's the one. And get this. Bishops at Chalcedon even recounted being forced, literally forced, to sign blank sheets of paper at Ephesus II.
Blank sheets? How?
Under threat. They mentioned soldiers with clubs and swords. Some said their pens were nearly broken in their hands.
Good grief. That sounds less like a council and more like, well, coercion, like something out of a bad movie.
It really does. It paints a very stark picture of a manipulated, deeply flawed process at Ephesus II, which hung over Chalcedon.
So if that's the background, what was session one itself like? Was it calmer?
Hardly. Chalcedon session one was apparently marked by incredible emotional intensity and mob pressure. We read about aggressive shouting matches between the different factions, awful insults hurled like, drive out the Jew, aimed at opponents.
That's shocking in a council of bishops.
It is. And drawing again from accounts of Ephesus II, which clearly influenced the atmosphere, there were shouts like, cleave, kill, and drive out those who say two natures. Imagine trying to have a nuanced theological discussion in that environment.
You can't. It sounds purely designed to intimidate.
Precisely. And think about the courage it would take for a bishop to hold firm to their beliefs in that room.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's the issue of double standards, right?
Yes, that's another major point. While Dioscorus is essentially on trial, Theodore de Cyrus is admitted to the council.
Theodoret. He was seen as leaning towards Nestorianism, wasn't he? That view emphasizing the distinctness of Christ's natures.
Correct. And many bishops strongly protested his admission because of those perceived Nestorian sympathies. But he was let in anyway.
So Dioscorus out, Theodoret in, despite protests, doesn't exactly scream even-handed justice.
It certainly signals a potential bias. And when Dioscorus actually tried to steer the conversation towards matters of faith first, what happened?
The imperial officials shut him down.
They did, rejected his plea flat out. They demanded he answer the accusations against him immediately.
So procedure and politics first, theology second, or maybe third.
It definitely seems that way. Theology is clearly subordinated to the political agenda of dealing with Dioscorus.
So how did session one actually end? What was the result of all this?
Well, by the end of that single day, Dioscorus was provisionally deposed.
Deposed by a vote of the bishops?
No, that's the key thing. He was deposed by the imperial officials presiding, not by a formal vote of the council itself at that point. And this was followed by shouts from some bishops like, "Christ has deposed the murderer."
The murderer?
Yeah.
Wow, that's intense.
Extremely. His subsequent arrest just cemented the whole impression. This looked like a predetermined, politically driven outcome.
Okay, so summing up session one.
You have overt imperial control, obvious bias against a key figure like Dioscorus, denial of procedural fairness, intimidation tactics, mob pressure. All these elements together laid a really deep foundation for why the Oriental Orthodox churches ultimately rejected Chalcedon.
They saw it as compromise from the start.
Exactly. They viewed it as an assembly where, frankly, political goals just steamrolled justice and theological consistency.
Yeah.
The process itself was seen as fundamentally flawed.
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it, how much of what we take as just, you know, historical fact or established doctrine was actually shaped by who held the power at the time.
The dynamics of power, the political maneuvering.
Yeah, rather than just pure theological agreement or objective truth. This deep dive really shows the messy reality behind these big historical moments.
It absolutely does. And the takeaway isn't just that politics was involved. Politics is always involved, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's how those mechanisms of power can undermine the very legitimacy of something, even a church council. When the process looks unjust, the outcome becomes tainted, even if some agree with the theology itself.
So a question for you listening. How does digging into the, well, the messy process and the politics of an ancient council like Chalcedon, how does that change how you think about the way major historical or religious doctrines were actually formed?
It's definitely something to reflect on.
Indeed. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope this gave you some serious food for thought.